Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, not even my co-host, my partner in crime, Jack Piatelli. How are we doing?
Good morning. Doing very well. The weather's been tremendous for our high school players, youth players this fall. So it's really nice to be able to get a lot of quality games in, enjoy the nice weather for lacrosse community out there.
It's very nice when you're playing. It's not so nice covering it on the sideline, freezing, not knowing how to layer yourself. But I'm learning. Did a nice 3-week stint where I went every weekend to a different tournament. Happy to have a little bit of a break, but you can check out all my work on laxjournal.com. But let's get to our guest. Our guest today, BU's Ryan Pulley.
First and only coach at BU, started the program. He's done a great job. Been named the Patriot coach, I know, a few times, and really built a very competitive program in a very competitive league, the Patriot League.
I think Patriot League's, and I've said this many times, it's a top three, top four league in the entire tyranny of Division I. The fact that BU has been able to make the playoffs as many times as they have, we're going to talk to him about his first class he's assembled, how he did it, his background at Merrimack and Yale. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And he's done it all. You know, he played at Merrimack, was an All-American. He's from Downingtown, Pennsylvania, went to Malvern Prep. So he's been around the game a long time, and he'll be a great voice for us today and learn quite a bit from him.
He's also got an incredible voice and an even better laugh. So we got to get him to laugh on the podcast. That's a goal.
That's easy.
Yeah.
We just bring up Clark.
Oh, wow. All right. Without any further ado, BU's Ryan Pulley. All right, we are in studio with BU head coach Ryan Pulley. Coach, how we doing?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be on your podcast.
It's a fun time. You know, I know that you and Jack have a relationship, and we've talked several times. And right before we started recording, we found out that we coached against each other back in the day.
Yeah, we were laughing about it. So, you know, Kyle and myself were in the NE10, the old NE10. Merrimack has moved on to Division I, but I was a head coach there from 2003 to 2006, and we just found out Kyle was an assistant, and we had we're talking about a specific game where, you know, I would say we got a little bit lucky, and basically CNA's played a great game, was up the whole game and up a goal, and all their goalie had to do was throw an outlet pass with about 5 seconds, and he ended up throwing it off a shaft of one of our players. It bounced at his foot. He threw it in the goal, and we went to overtime and ended up beating St. A's. So a memorable game in my coaching career.
Yeah, I remember it because I was coaching with Jerry Byrne, and it was like watching someone explode. So that was cool. Jerry Byrne, who is now the head coach at Harvard.
Yeah.
It's funny how everybody kind of, you know, gets through in cycles, and you're all like great head coaches at D1 programs, and I am doing a podcast. But it's cool. It's fun.
Well, someone's meant to be, right, Kyle?
We're meant to be here. Right, Jack?
Absolutely. Coach, you're going into your 10th season at BU. It seems like yesterday. Mm-hmm. You're our first guest coach to actually go to a program and start a program. Tell us a little bit about that first year and the whole process and how it worked and how you were able to get the players and
sure,
and really how it all transpired.
Yeah, we'll go down memory lane. This will be great. So 10th year in as the head coach, but we've only had 8 years of lacrosse. So this will be our 9th year of playing on the field. So we had a year to recruit. So went through an extensive interview process, you know, very, you know, grateful that Drew Maricello and at the time the AD Mike Lynch gave me an opportunity to be the head coach at BU. Going to Merrimack and then coaching at Merrimack, I certainly had a feeling that Boston was a great place. Didn't know much about BU But through the interview process, found out it was a great academic institution, and with the location right downtown Boston, you know, I really felt it was going to be a destination place for, that kids would want to attend. So kind of dove in, you know, I was thinking about this morning as, you know, preparing for this podcast and things that we might talk about. You know, we just rolled up our sleeves. At the time, it was myself and Coach Kelleher, who's now the head coach at Manhattan. And we had the job and the responsibility to recruit a full team to compete the next season. So we kind of looked at, you know, at the time, there was a bunch of schools that were, you know, Michigan had just started, High Point had just started, Richmond was right around the similar time. So we had some roadmaps that we looked at. And with our particular situation, we thought the best route was recruit a full team. Of freshmen. So we had a club program at the time. It had about 45 players on it. So we basically had two choices. Were we going to take the club team and filter in, you know, a regular recruiting class of like 12, and that was going to be our first year? Or were we going to take selected kids from the club team and recruit almost a full team of freshmen? So we decided on the latter. And, you know, for that first year, you know, we brought in 30 freshmen to compete in that first season. So it was a lot of long nights, a lot of, you know, I still am very thankful for Drew and all his hard work. And, you know, we were working 17, 18-hour days, you know, recruiting. So if you think about it in today's perspective, you know, you're typically recruiting juniors. You see them throughout the summer, and then you get them all on campus. Well, you had to fast forward 2 years. So we basically had zero commits going into their senior year. So it would be almost like starting 2 months ago and trying to recruit the 22 class to get commitments that next fall. So we had a lot of work, you know, a lot of visits, you know, spent a lot of time on the road, and, you know, brought in a class of 30 players. And it was just a great class. It was a great, you know, I was thinking about this too. It was really a sign that there's so many good players out there. And there's guys that were under-recruited. Guys, at the time, we had 4 scholarships. We started with 4. We went to 7. And then by our third year, we were fully funded. So bringing in 30 players, we had to be very economical about how we divided scholarships. So there were some kids that came in on either very low offers or came in, you know, came in as not a, essentially a walk-on when it comes to, you know, a scholarship standpoint, but we knew they were going to play for us. And those guys turned out to be great players. Like, some of them are MLL players that were non-scholarship players for BU that were under-recruited. Sometimes we were their only opportunity, and they were great players. So, you know, like I said, ton of hard work. You know, my first day, you know, that we had visits, it was like my first day that I was actually in the office. I went right from accepting the job to going on the road. But my first day in the office was I had 8 visits that day. So, I mean, we started at 6:30 in the morning, and it was walking up Comm Ave, showing them, you know, everything, having the conversation with them. And literally the next recruit was waiting outside my door and do that, you know, did that, got a lot of steps in that day. And, you know, put together a really competitive class, and, you know, had a vision when I took the job, and, you know, excited to be where we are today.
Yeah, and back then you were actually able to recruit 8th graders and freshmen. I remember talking to you once about recruiting the younger players, saying, you know, it was a very uncomfortable situation because you felt like you're talking to a young kid instead of a, now where they changed the rule, you can only contact the players September 1st of their junior year. If that was the case back then, it would have been a little more challenging for you to bring a whole class in.
Well, at the time, we just had to decide where our attention was going to go. So we were trying to build this first class, but we were also trying to be competitive as quickly as possible. So we were at the same time recruiting the seniors, we were recruiting juniors, we were recruiting sophomores. And, you know, we were recruiting 4 classes. And usually, you know, once we got the first class situated and we kind of moved on to, you know, the second and third classes, it became a little bit more of a natural cycle. But those first years, and that's why we were working so many hours, is we were trying to get the first team committed and get them ready and go through all the things that you go through. But we were also recruiting a junior class, recruiting sophomores, and trying to commit those kids because the rules allowed us to talk to those kids and communicate with those kids. So it was a busy time for sure.
I think one of my favorite qualities of your team that you've developed into kind of your identity is, I believe, for 2 or 3 years in a row, you led the NCAA in just shots. Like, you guys take a ton of shots. You ride hard. Mm-hmm. You take advantage of transition. You're one of the first teams to really, like, get those upset wins employing that strategy. And now it seems like everybody does that. And I think you were really ahead of that in the curve.
Yeah, we had it when we were a little bit deficient in talent just because of just lateness of the recruiting process and taking some kids that were under-recruited but had a chip on their shoulder. I think we tried to find ways to create upsets. And, you know, we ride really hard. That's a staple of our program. We 10-man ride. You know, we cause a lot of turnovers. You know, we've led the country in turnovers. We've been blessed to have multiple, you know, pro players at the LSM position. So, you know, we believe we play a fun brand of lacrosse, and we are not afraid to shoot the ball. And if we get good opportunities, you know, those guys have the green light to take shots. You know, we certainly want to take good shots, but at the same time, you know, we don't want kids looking over their shoulder thinking about every shot that they take.
Also a history of incredible goalies.
Yeah, we've been blessed. And you know, CB, Christian Carson Bannister. And again, it kind of goes back, you know, when you think about recruiting, you know, in my opinion, it's a really inexact science. You do the best you can, you evaluate, you trust your evaluations, and then you get a little bit lucky. Like Christian was a great, great goalie, but he was the backup goalie of a kid that went to University of Maryland, barely played. And frankly, if we didn't take three goalies in our inaugural class, we probably don't take Christian. And, you know, not that he wasn't a great player, but he was just behind a kid that he didn't get a lot of opportunities. So we took Christian, and not as an afterthought, but a part of a plan. And, you know, very quickly, it was our first weekend. We scrimmaged Hartford. I forget who the other team was. We scrimmaged. It was our first weekend. And coming out of the week, we played two full games. And coming out of the week, we're like, Christian is our best goalie. And we had a highly recruited kid from Ohio that had other opportunities, but he wanted to come be you. And then we had another kid that was from, you know, a name program who we thought was going to compete. And Christian was our third string goalie going into the fall. And he turned out to be the best one and MLL player, you know, third team All-American, and was great. And then follow that up with Joe McSorley, who's been a 3-year starter. And I think was a little undervalued by the public. I thought Joe was terrific. And then certainly, Garber has done a terrific job last year and, is a front runner to be our starter this year.
It's funny how the college perception with media changes. Because, I've always lived up here. So I am familiar with usually the best players at all of the schools that are regional in New England. And I remember having a conversation with the guys at IL, and I was like, we got to start covering BU, man. Like, they're going to get an upset this year. And that was the year that you beat Loyola. Yeah. And I rubbed it in their face for 2 years. So I appreciate that for me. So I thank you for that.
Yeah. I mean, again, you put these, it comes down to the kids, and the kids put themselves, they work so hard. We ask so much of them on a daily basis, and they make so many sacrifices, and they just do everything. You know, they love the program and they work hard and they believe in the coaches and they believe in themselves. And it gives you an opportunity to play the number two team in the country and play in front of 2,000 fans and on your homecoming and play an unbelievable game and beat a really high caliber team. And we've given ourselves an opportunity to do that. I'm hopeful that we continue on that path and, win a Patriot League championship in the near future. And, you know, we certainly believe we're on that trajectory.
Coach, tell us how your recruiting process has changed from day one when you had to, you know, build the program and bring in so many players to have enough players to compete at the Division I level and where you are today.
Yeah, I think we're a little bit more selective. We have the ability to be more selective. I had a conversation with John Donowski probably early in my BU career, 3 or 4 years in, and we were – he just asked how recruiting was going, and I got very specific, and I said, hey, we're recruiting this kid, and it's us and two Ivies, and I think we're gonna have to wait a couple weeks, and he's got, again, we were very specific. And he goes, so you're basically telling me that you're not this number one choice, and you're waiting to see if he gets into an Ivy League school or if an Ivy League school passes. And I said, yeah that's true. And he said, where you want to get is where you're recruiting kids that BU's their first choice. And, it was And he followed that quickly up by saying, I'm at Duke. It's easy for me to say that. You know, I'm not like not everyone has the reputation or the history or, you know, the facilities that we have. And I certainly understand that. But when you start getting kids that BU is their first choice and that's where they want to be. And, you know, certainly we've, you know, have felt the, you know, we've lost some kids through, you know, other schools taking kids that we've recruited. And, you know, you question if BU was their first choice all along or that, you know, was their best opportunity at the time. But anyway, we've really focused on, you know, taking a player and we think they're just as talented as some of these kids, but maybe they're from a program that's not as well known. Maybe they don't play on one of the national club teams that everybody knows. But we take these kids that we feel that BU is their first choice. And that has really changed our philosophy this year. You know, we got a couple spots left in the 23 class, but we've taken a bunch of kids that in years past, we might have waited on and say, hey, we're going to try to get this kid who's interested in an ACC school or, an Ivy League school. And if it doesn't work out with that school, you know, we'll be, you know, their second choice and here to, take them when they don't get their first choice. And sometimes we lose those other kids that really want to be at BU, but they need to do what's best for them and their families, and they make other decisions. So we've been really intentional about if we get the sense that BU is their first choice, that's almost like a checkbox in their profile. And we've really looked at those kids hard, you know, really given them not the benefit of the doubt, but we've taken a really hard look at them. And if they fit what we're trying to do, you know, has moved a little bit quicker with them.
And obviously it's got to change the culture in the locker room, having players that want to be there and second guessing themselves, oh, I should be playing somewhere else, or this isn't the place for me. That could create some turmoil in the locker room. But because you have those players, the culture, I'm certainly has changed.
Yeah, our culture has been as good as it has been in my time here this year, and I think there's a lot in our senior class. There's a lot of those kids that had other opportunities, and for whatever reason, I do think we do a great job recruiting the Massachusetts area. That's part of our recruiting strategy. Our goal is, you know, we want to keep a top five player in Massachusetts home. We identify a couple kids each year, and we put a lot of effort into recruiting those kids and talking about, you know, being from Boston and playing in front of, you know, home crowd. And we also talk about, you know, taking BU to that next level. You know, right now the next level for us is winning a Patriot League championship or qualifying for an NCAA tournament and then getting our program over that hump. You know, we certainly have, over our history, have beaten teams that have qualified or won the Patriot League, but we haven't done it when it mattered most. So being consistent is always something that we're striving for, and we're very hopeful with some of the kids that we've kept home that they're going to, you know, meet that, the dream, the vision that we've had, and help us get over that hump.
Yeah, and just looking at your roster, though, you have kids from as far as Washington, Minnesota, Florida, Oregon. It's you're hitting California, all of these different states and regions in the United States, getting kids to come to BU from there, as well as getting that hometown mix. That must make for a really interesting locker room.
Yeah, it's the blessing of BU. We're 15 minutes away from Logan Airport, and, you know, we're a school in the city. We've done really well. You know, we talked about Christian Carson Bannister earlier. He's a Texas kid. You know, Sam Talco was an elite face-off kid from Florida. When you think about kids from those areas, too, they're used to the big high schools. You know, BU is a medium-sized institution. We have 14,000 undergraduate. Sometimes the New England kids, you know, that's a big school for them. So, but when you deal with the Florida, you deal with the Texas, you deal with California, that's like 4,000 is like somebody's high school. So when we say, you know, we're 14,000, they don't blink. You know, they want to go to a school that's a little bit bigger than their high school, and it's a natural fit. And then you combine that with just, you know, the easiness of getting from, you know, wherever they're coming from and getting to Logan Airport, and their parents can come visit and they don't have to rent a car, and, you know, they can be in Boston. It's just been a really good fit. So we recruit non-traditional places very hard and have been very successful with those players.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. Catch the Sacred Heart University Pioneers on the ice this season. The Pioneers Division I men and women's hockey programs will not disappoint. Season ticket packages and individual tickets are on sale now at sacredheartpioneers.com. And opening in 2023, Sacred Heart University's Martirri Family Arena, a brand new 122,000 square foot premier skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. Learn more at sacredheartpioneers.com.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
I think one of the things that stands out in just my, I don't want to say dealings, that's the wrong word, coverage of, sure, of BU has been, you know, you have your own journalism program. It's a super strong journalism program, one of the top in the country. You always have, you're one of the only schools that always has a person from the school covering it, and they're asking like better questions than me. And that's always like gotten me. I've always tried to like come prepared to BU games because you have one of the best setups for media, right? Like sometimes I'll go cover a school and I'm like, where do I go? I don't know. And with BU, I knew the first day, I knew exactly where to go. I knew where not to go, which is actually more important, especially walking that track. But I, you know, that kind of environment breeds kind of a consistency and a specialness that I think maybe people that haven't seen a game at Nickerson don't understand.
When BU made the decision to go from club to varsity, it was a well thought out decision. They had a sponsorship in place. At the time it was New Balance. We've since moved to Under Armour. You know, they had a plan about our scholarship and how we were going to be funded. They had a plan to build a state of the art locker room, and they had these internal things in place. You know, you talk about our, you know, we were all off air. We were talking about Kevin Edelson, our SID, does a phenomenal job. Okay. And then certainly with the school of journalism, you know, in the school paper, you know, I get a phone call after every single game. It makes the kids feel important. They read about themselves in a paper that other students are reading. And it has a sense of professionalism. And BU has positioned us to be successful. And I'm really appreciative of that.
Coach, you're from Downingtown, PA. You went to Malvern Prep. You're in the Hall of Fame. A great high school player. How did you end up at Merrimack?
I actually went there to play basketball. So I picked up lacrosse late in my career. I didn't even know what lacrosse was until I got to Malvern Prep. And Malvern was part of, it's changed since, but they were part of the PIAA. And in football and basketball, which I played my whole life, we couldn't play in state playoffs. And lacrosse was kind of like this weird like offset. We weren't PIAA, so they had this lacrosse playoffs. And you know, we weren't as quite as known for our lacrosse as we are now, but one afternoon after baseball practice, I'm just walking back and they're playing the first round of the playoff game and they win in overtime. And I'm like, I don't even know what this sport is, but I see it and the excitement, guys are throwing sticks. And I did some research and made some connections. And, you know, a neighbor of mine, John Rohde, who coached at Malvern and was a Unionville coach, gave me my first stick and was like, you should try this. And, you know, my first time playing lacrosse was a sophomore tryout. You know, I was athletic enough, had basketball background, ended up, you know, quickly picking up the game and was recruited. You know, I got recruited by Georgia. I went on recruiting visits to Georgetown and Notre Dame for lacrosse, but I love basketball. So Merrimack was the highest level I could play basketball, and decided to play basketball at Merrimack. It was an Augustinian school similar to Merrimack, and was a little bit more affordable for my parents because of that. I played 2 years of basketball, and when basketball didn't work out, decided to, you know, try lacrosse, and had a great 4 year. I actually stayed an extra half year to play my 4 years at Merrimack, and, you know, had an opportunity to coach and just kind of stayed in it that way. So I ended up at Merrimack to play basketball.
It's a great story.
Yeah. Well,
and, I'm sure you picked up lacrosse very quickly, because I think basketball is exactly the same game in terms of offense and defense and, you know, the X's and O's and how you, you know, move the ball on offense to try and get a good quality shot. Defense, obviously, a lot of communication. You play man-to-man, you play zone. Yeah. So for you, it was probably very easy to pick up in terms of the understanding of the game and how to play and execute as a player on the field.
Yeah, I fell completely to my basketball background. And, you know, that's why I think my best days were ahead of me in college, but, you know, I wasn't a superstar, but I think coaches understood, like I probably would have been a D middy at Georgetown or Notre Dame, but I certainly understood defense. I had good footwork, you know, communicated just from basketball. And, you know, I basically just played basketball with a stick in my hand, and that's kind of how I learned, and, you know, still kind of understand those concepts, and, you know, turned out to be an offensive midi when I put time into stick work. But we still do a ton of stuff, you know, with basketball and just how we think about things. And you talk, you know, I still think of a 10-man rise like a press, and you know, forcing, you know, giving up shots to just teams take bad shots because you're putting them in a pressure situation, just like you do in a press. So there's a lot of concepts that we still apply from my basketball. My brain still is a basketball brain.
And now we have the shot clock like basketball, yeah, and we have backcourt violation as well.
Exactly.
You know, so
I haven't figured out how to, you know, get the backcourt consistently, but yeah, the game certainly I think, you know, is very consistent with the basketball, you know, the rules and, you know, just the strategies.
They were one of the first teams to do that overload trap jump, which I enjoy at the half line. Like they, I don't want to say it's been kind of tweaked now, but you guys were one of the first teams to really like use that at the D1 level as consistently as like one of your main weapons.
Yeah. Again, we've been blessed to have some really athletic LSMs that can cover a lot of field. And, you know, it's certainly if you put somebody in that position and, but you have to get there, you know, that's a lot of field or basketball. You're on a smaller court and there's, you know, five people, but you know, you got to work really hard and be really athletic to be able to get side to side. And fortunately we've had some, LSMs that could do that.
Your defenders sell out. I don't recall the player's name. One of the greatest non-goalie saves I've ever seen.
Oh yeah.
He ran back. Do you remember the player's name? Yeah.
You know, Malcolm Glendening.
Okay, Glendening runs back. They turn the ball over on the ride, and it's close to the half line. And the one of the players on the other team goes to shoot it, and he jumps, dives full extension, and tips it with his shaft. Not even the head of the stick. Tips it away from the goal because the goalie was out.
Yeah, we were in a 10-man ride. It was against Army, and it was
unbelievable.
Very close. It was a low-scoring game, so every goal mattered. And Army kid shot the ball with an open net, which we were, you know, we tempt teams to do. But it was going in, and Malcolm made an unbelievable read and dove. And it was, I remember the play exactly. And it was just an unbelievable individual effort.
It's just burned into my head because you don't see defensive plays don't get nearly as much attention as offensive plays. And you know, lacrosse is built for that. Media is built for that. It's kind of our fault, I guess. I'll take it on the chin for lacrosse media for publicizing too many great goals. But I remember that happening and then being like, I need to get a clip of this right away, put it on Twitter. I need to make a big deal. I need to put this in the rundown and I need to have a video of it. So because people didn't understand, because I was explaining it to someone, they're like, yeah, so what? I'm like, no, 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 you don't understand. He ran the whole way from the restraining line to make this tip save in a game. I think it was, 9-8? Something like that?
Yeah, we ended up winning like 7-6 and we were up. I think Army was up 2 goals. So, I mean, it was a turning point in the game. And that game actually got us into the playoffs.
Yes.
The winner of that game was going to get the 6th seed. Army didn't make the playoffs that year. And then we went on to upset Bucknell and keep them out of the tournament. So, I mean, it was a season-making play.
Yeah. Prior to you taking the BU job, too, we don't want to, you know, we've talked a lot about Merrimack, but you're also at Yale. Mm-hmm. How did that experience, working with Coach Shea, kind of shape and working with the defense while you were there, shape your approach when you became a D1 head coach?
I mean, Andy's my mentor. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, had a terrific head coach at Merrimack when I was there, Frank Alloy. And Frank's done wonders for my career, and he was a great coach, and I love playing for Frank. But just the way that Andy's approach to culture, Andy's approach to, you know, attention to detail, you know, Andy's approach to managing his staff. Like, I had full autonomy over the defense. And, you know, certainly Andy knew what was going on, and I was running a lot of things that, you know, he implemented in his time before I got there. But if I wanted to tweak something, if I wanted to make a change, if I wanted to do this particular defense for this particular opponent, Andy gave me full autonomy. And, you know, he trusted me, and there was a ton of trust between him and our staff. And there was a ton of trust between him and the players. And I learned that from him, and we have that with our staff. You know, Mike Slippo and Judd Lattimore have complete autonomy over their units. You know, Coach Uecker has full autonomy over, you know, the faceoff personnel. We certainly have discussions about it. And if there's something that, just like Andy, if there was something that Andy wanted to see or thought that could help our unit, he was certainly going to express that. But at the end of the day, you know, he was going to lean on me for, you know, 95% of the calls and stuff that was going to go on with my unit. So I really appreciated that.
Coach, I was told you are become the coach you are today because of your days as the head women's coach at Andover High School.
Yeah.
You were there for 3 years, got an opportunity to coach the girls' team. And what kind of an experience was that for you? And what did you take away from the girls' game that you've been able to apply to your coaching style today?
Yeah, it was just a great experience. It was you know, gave me experience in building a program. Andover did not have a lacrosse program. They were starting the program when I came out of high school. So I had an opportunity to be an assistant coach for Mike Conley at North Andover on the boys' side. And I thought, you know, I basically told Mike I was going to take the job. And then all of a sudden I got this call, hey, do you want to be the head coach? And, you know, I don't know if it was ego or just, you know, an opportunity to do something myself. But it was on the girls' side, and I, you know, talked to a lot of people, and you know, I made the decision to commit to this girls' program, and it taught a lot about patience. It taught a lot about delivery. I had to change my delivery of how, you know, getting my point across. It taught me about, you know, there's different ways to teach things. There's different perspectives. You know, it taught me a lot. You know, it was a game I didn't know anything about. So I had to dive into the rules. I had to dive in, you know, just communicating with officials was a little bit different. And, you know, it just taught me, it gave me a great foundation for just who I am today. And, you know, I really value that experience. I think about those teams. I got to coach with one of my best friends who helped me out as my assistant. So it was awesome spending time with him. And, you know, it was just a tremendous experience. And just, I will say this, you know, I really enjoyed coaching the girls because they wanted to be coached. And, you know, kind of, you know, we talked about recruiting. And that's a big thing for us. When we recruit somebody, we have the conversation with them. Do you actually want to be coached? Or do you want, and I mean coached hard. And that is, you know, being constructively criticized. It means if when you do screw up, you're going to hear about it. And if you're not working hard enough, you know, we're going to have a conversation about it. So, you know, I learned from the girls game and how effective it could be when, you know, the girls at the time had no ego and they wanted to be coached and they tried their hardest to do what you were asking them to do. And we were successful because of that. And not that boys aren't always willing or able to be coach, but I felt the girls was a little bit more priority in theirs, and the boys had to work a little bit harder with that.
Coach, the people that are listening are mostly from the New England region, and there's only one other New England school in the Patriot League in Holy Cross besides BU that is local. Everyone else is kind of spread out in the Northeast and along the seaboard. What can you tell our listeners about the Patriot League? What makes the Patriot League special? What differentiates it from some of the other leagues they may be familiar with?
I mean, the first thing is the coaching. And when you, every single week, if you do not have your A-plus coaching game, you will get exploited. And, you know, I have so much respect for the coaches across our league. They do a tremendous job. You know, just thinking about some of the facilities and resources that people have that we can compete on a national level year in, year out. You know, typically our goal is always to get two teams into the NCAA tournament. We're pretty successful with that most years. You know, that's the first thing. Then the second thing, it's just such a cool conference because of just the diversity of institutions. You have two military academies that, you know, have such tradition from a lacrosse standpoint, but are also doing something so special, you know, with their candidates. Then you have Loyola, this program that's literally trying to win a national championship every single year. And then you have some schools that are all, you know, from a location standpoint are, you know, on different spots, and they're, you know, certainly the way that they approach lacrosse is a little bit different, but it's all I can say is I have so much respect for every single coach and every single program and how they do things. And it's a dogfight every single week in the Patriot League. And there's some really good teams. So if you have an opportunity, come out and watch and just kind of the history and the support. You know, we play Navy at home. We play Army at home. You know, come out to those games. It's on a Saturday. Come out and watch, you know, the fanfare that they have and the way that they travel. And just, you know, it's just, number one, it's super lacrosse. And number two, it's a really cool environment to watch a game and see how, you know, competitors at their best.
Coach, tell us a little bit of how fall went. I know The last couple of years have been challenging for all of us with the pandemic.
Sure.
And how are your freshmen coming along?
Yeah.
Your class, freshman class.
The fall's been terrific. I can't remember a fall that I've enjoyed more than this fall. And I think a lot has to do with, you know, certainly what you referenced. I think everybody, you take things for granted. And you, you know, not that people... I'm trying to think of the best way to articulate it. Not that people, you know, look at things in a different way, but when things are taken away from you, you can't be with your team, you can't celebrate wins, or you can't, you know, be together after a hard loss. You know, those moments together are so much better that next year. So the ability to, you know, we still have some compliance things that we have to follow, but for the most part, we've had a full fall. We've been practicing with a full team. You know, we've got some important contributors back from a leadership role. Everybody's just so happy. It's so good to see smiles on kids' faces, and every single day has been, you know, it's kind of cliche, but it's been a blessing, you know, to be with these kids, and it's just, you know, our kids work really hard. So it's been terrific. You know, freshmen are coming along really, really well. So, you know, certainly they've been welcomed into the fold. Our team does a great job with our culture and including everybody. So I think they feel part of our family very quickly. And from a talent standpoint, you know, we got a couple guys that are going to play for us, which I'm excited about.
Coach, last one for me. We're going into the 2022 season. Obviously you're going to play a very stacked in league Patriot schedule. Who are some of the teams that you're playing out of conference?
I'm not sure if I can say.
It's not on the website, so yeah, I have to, that's why I asked. What do you got signed? Just tell me the ones you have the deal for.
Yeah. I'll probably get in trouble for this, but that's okay.
We'll hold the podcast for 2 weeks.
It's, yeah, exactly. We're going to play Andy down at Yale. So that's going to be our marquee non-conference game. We'll continue to play Harvard, which has been a great,
huge rivalry.
Yeah. Has been some really good games, a lot of overtime games. We're going to play Princeton for the first time. They've already announced that we're going to go down to Princeton. And then I'm really excited to play UMass. You know, we were supposed to play UMass last season, which I was really excited about. And it got canceled because of COVID. We play Merrimack in our opener, and then we play Bryant So, you know, I think Bryant's going to be outstanding this year. So by far the most competitive schedule we've ever played. And, you know, I think our team is going to be up for the challenge.
UMass-BU should be the Battle of Massachusetts. You have a name for that yet?
Not yet.
We're going to get a name for that. Yeah. You're going to get a cup. We got to get like
Jerry's already talking about a Charles River Cup. So, I stay tuned. But I think we're going to play for something, the Harvard-BU game. And then certainly, you know, continue to think of creative ideas to get fans excited about these local rivalries.
Yeah, I think it's great. You're going to play Merrimack, Yale, Harvard, even Princeton, but keeping it, you know, in Boston. It's great for the kids in the Boston area. Have an opportunity to play, I mean, watch great lacrosse, because 5-10 years ago, the young lads and, you know, I'm an old statesman here. we didn't have the lacrosse that's played today at BU and the Merrimacks and the Harvards and, you know, Brown always obviously had a long traditional program, but Yale's come a long way, and UMass. So I think it's great that you're playing these teams and keeping it local.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, COVID taught us a lot of things, and one of the things that it taught us, you know, you start looking at your budget and you start looking at, you know, we went out to Ohio State, we've flown to Duke, and those are great program games. They were tremendous. It's nice to see other facilities. You got to go on the road and play a top five team. It's extremely challenging. It gets your team prepared for conference play. But when you look at it, what is the value when you can do that to go play, go to New Haven and take a bus, save, you know, $25,000 and play Yale and play a top five team? You know, Princeton, same thing. UMass, play a top 20, top 15 team, where it's just more efficient and more, you know, economical. So, you know, those are some of the decisions that we had to make because of COVID. And certainly the games are here, like you said. It's just pulling the trigger and making them happen.
Yeah, it's great for recruiting as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We go against those guys and, you know, if, you know, knock on wood, we play well. And, you know, it's certainly that Loyola game that you reference, you know, once you beat a top five team, top, you know, they were two at the time. Yep. You can put yourself on the radar for sure.
I think Jack just wants you to schedule Cornell. So he doesn't have to, yeah, exactly. You can see his son's play. He doesn't have to drive all the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Just go to Boston.
That'll be a great one for sure.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. But okay. Thank you so much for coming in and, you know, great work. And I can't wait to see the Terriers play this spring.
And come back again.
Yeah, it was easy. It was easy. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
It's great having
appreciate
you,
what you're doing for New England, too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Good stuff.
And that was BU head coach Brian Poley. Jack, what'd you think?
Very knowledgeable of the game, specializes on the defensive side, but really impressed with how detailed he is as a coach and the planning that goes in the program and how he got the program started and the challenges that took place to get the program off the ground. And it's hard to believe this is going to be his 10th season already. I remember when they hired him as the coach, it seems like yesterday.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I remember going and seeing the field and product testing on BU's field for a lacrosse company and him being there and being like, what are you doing here? I'm like, what are you doing here? I'm the coach. So it's great to go from that to a great interview like that and then kind of see him out. And, you know, I think they're going to be pretty good in the Patriot League this year.
Yeah, what I like about the Patriot League, it's not only is it very competitive, but there's a lot of parity. You really don't know who's going to come, you know, at the top of the heap at the end of the season. And BU over the years has really gotten better as the season goes on.
Yeah, that's a lot to do with their coaching staff and their adjustments. And, you know, Coach Poley has shown on the podcast, he's very knowledgeable, an excellent source of information and a true like pioneer in the community, especially in Boston at BU. But we want to thank you again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.